Do you think the merits of a life are calculated at death and nothing can be added after that? That would be a simplified view. If a notary, the day after death, made up a definitive inventory of the fortune of the dead person, the Lord would not care. He does not consider only what is but also what will be. He judges the tree by its fruits, by those that he has borne already and those he will bear in the future. Your son who almost tells a lie stops when he thinks all of a sudden of the honest gaze of his father. Generosity surges in him when he remembers how greatly you were loved. Are not these the fruits of your husband's life? And who can say the number of beings who are and will be better, thanks to him? The tree will be judged by its fruits. It partly depends on you that these fruits are abundant and nourishing. The true cult of the dead is not to be sad in our hearts. It is to make sure that the lives of our deceased are still fruitful on earth and more glorious in heaven. Each day's grace. Perhaps I would have the courage to carry my cross today, but this is not the heaviest cross. The heaviest crosses are yesterday's crosses and tomorrow's. The past weighs upon me with all the weight of lost joys and strengths, in spite of myself. When I am tired at night, I dream of the time when we were two, when I only had half of a life to bear. And tomorrow is still heavier. Tomorrow will be the wear and tear of work, the money that I need, the children growing up without my knowing how to understand or help them. Why do you burden yourself so? Sufficient for the day are the cares thereof, sufficient for the day is the grace thereof. Each day God gives whoever asks it sufficient strength for the day. Didn't he teach us to say, "Give us this day our daily bread"? The bread for the day, for one single day. No more, no less. Let us remember the strange episode of the manna of the Bible. Over a day, a rain of bread fell, but they could not save this manna. After 24 hours it spoiled. But each day the miracle occurred again. Don't linger over sterile, obsessive regrets in your heart and your thoughts. Unite yourself in the present to Him who loves you always, and whom you love forever. Lean upon Him in prayer. He is not a memory that fades but a living presence. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't imagine the worst nor the best. Know only that when tomorrow is today, the Lord will be there to help you, and your husband also, to make you stronger than the fatigue, trials, and temptations. God gives you every day the courage to live, but He gives it only for the day. His grace is, like bread and love, a daily nourishment. And if you object, "It is too much for me. I cannot bear to think of it." Remember that even if the burden seems bigger than you are, it is not bigger than God. I will. A true Christian knows how to discover the loving hand of God behind everything that happens. And that is why a widow can respond with confidence and willingness to the thousand difficulties that come up in life. Confidence and willingness are words of faith. Faith in an infallible divine providence which nothing escapes. Faith in the paternal devotion of the Lord, of which everything that happens, no matter how upsetting, is a manifestation. It is the certitude that God can only wish good for His children, that He is powerful enough to clear away from their path whatever would be fatal, that His goodness tempers the wind to the shorn lamb. If He permits a trial, it is because the hour has come for Him to prune the vine so it will bear more fruit. To respond with confidence and willingness is not a bitter consent or an acceptance of pure duty, but words of love, very similar to the words that the angel Gabriel heard from the lips of the Virgin, "Behold the handmaid. Let it be done to me." Willingness is a word that opens the heart to the presence of Christ. It bespeaks the giving of self, the offering of oneself to serve or suffer. "I will" is a word of courtesy which expresses a politeness of heart and a nobility of soul. Is it not proper that the children of God imitate the Lord of courtesy, as Dante called God? It is a word of strength, not a tame resignation, a refusal of battle, or an easy resignation before difficulties. It is not an acceptance of evil but the will to take good from evil, to triumph by an abundance of love. It is not the discouraged attitude of a person who sits down in defeat before an obstacle, but the decision to surmount it, come what may. It is a heroic word in many circumstances. A heroic face that smiles so as not to betray the heart's distress. A heroic soul that sings so as not to founder in sadness. Must a widow, already burdened by the care of many children, take work outside the home? A little boy is ill, for the mother the nights are hard. Does she have to reduce expenses to make ends meet? She does all these things willingly. How often this demands an heroic I will. Not all the hours of a widow's life are dark. Not all events are sorrowful. For them, the sun shines too, joys flourish in their homes, graces bear fruit in the hearts of their children. May they also respond in these hours willingly. Perhaps it is well to recall that joys, as sorrows, must be welcomed with a good heart. We all know some who have forgotten how to open their window to the light and the springtime, to marvel with their children at the song of a bird, or to be happy before the words and gestures of a good friend. I will. Keep this word in your heart. Turn to it during the day, it will help you to face life. When sorrows, small or large, beset you, see in them the question Christ asks you, will you accept? I will. Can work be prayer? To work is to pray, they say. If that is true, it must be comforting for you to think that the work of an overburdened widow is doubly a prayer. To run errands and keep house, to prepare meals and feed the children, to get the little ones up and put them to bed, to work in the home and outside of it, have all these the value of prayer in the eyes of God? No, one cannot say that these various tasks are always prayer, any more than one can say that a handshake is always a token of love, unless the heart is given with it. In the same way, work is only prayer in the measure that the will to offer work to God orients your acts. Christ said to the Jews, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." Therefore, if your heart is far from him when you work, your work is not a prayer. But if your heart is close to him, if from morning to night of the long day you try to do his will and not yours, then your work is a prayer. But one cannot be always attentive to God, you say. That is true, no more than you can think all the time of your children, although your affection for them inspires all your acts. As I mentioned before, it is not a question of a conscious attention but of a presence of heart. What absorbs the spirit need not necessarily distract the heart. I recall a widow I met in a small mountain village who told me, "My heart is always occupied with God." Her conscious attention was devoted to duties of farm life, but her heart was not engrossed for all that, it stayed with God. You do not attain this by yourself, it is a grace, but one which the Lord is impatient to give to his children. Nor do you attain it suddenly, you must exercise it. Every morning you must take the time to foresee the day's tasks and to offer them to God for love of him. In the course of the day you must stop your work from time to time to express once again the desire that all your acts have the value of love, praise, and prayer in the eyes of God. Persevere. It is difficult at first, but it quickly fills the need of your heart. Then the great peace of God will imbue your life. When you hold the wrist of your small feverish child to count his pulse, you feel his heartbeats under your fingers. So your Father in heaven, noticing each humble act of a widow's life, perceives the pulse of your love for him. Another kind of maternity. It would be quite wrong to imagine that the mother of the Savior was after his death absorbed in the past, unconcerned with the earth and life. Certainly she possessed a wealth of memories, 33 years of the most profound union that ever existed between a mother and her son. And such a son. She thought of this, yes. But not in order to escape the present. She recalled events of other days in order to live more intensely each new day as it came. Mary's time after Good Friday was heavy with care and responsibilities. Don't forget that Jesus had confided to her the little flock of disciples. And it was no small thing to have to watch over the goodwill and the frailties of these simple men whose mission was to found an empire, and who sometimes still asked themselves doubting questions. She kept them in her vigilant prayer. She welcomed them when they came, full of questions, quickly enthusiastic, quickly discouraged. Her peaceful and silent soul was a refuge to them. Near to her, they found him for whom they had left everything, they were reassured. She loved them with a humble yet strong love. Nor did they exhaust the wealth of this love. For along with them she carried in her the whole world that had yet to be born to divine life. No one was excluded from her Catholic soul, the smallest, the most hidden, the most miserable of men is also her son. You mothers who know what a half dozen children can mean in terms of care, sorrow, hope, and solicitude can imagine what Mary's life was from that day when she adopted at the request of her son, the whole of humanity. When God takes from a woman the person whom she loves most, she thinks she has lost her heart and all her ability to love, but if she truly consents to the sacrifice, as Mary did, God gives her a new heart and an unquenchable love. A new life begins for her, too. She will be a mother again. This time it will be a spiritual motherhood and her children will be the first beneficiaries. Moreover, it will affect many others. Often she will see proof of this. But it is in faith alone, without exception, that she must look for the whole truth. She must await with faith the day when God will point out to her what has been engendered in others by the love and sacrifice of a faithful life. To love still more. Read again with me that admirable page of Saint Luke which presents Anne the prophetess to us. The evangelist only needs several verses to engrave an unforgettable portrait, almost a Rembrandt etching, of this woman well advanced in years, to suggest the spiritual charm of the face of this old woman transparent with a divine light, to evoke for us her compelling destiny. After 7 years of marriage, Anne became a widow, and she tended the house of the Lord instead of her own, and the love of God took over the love of her husband. During the long years of her widowhood, she honored God day and night in fasting and in prayer. And then one day when she was 84 years old in the sanctuary of the temple she met her Savior, who was only several weeks old. And then this woman, long silent, whom everyone knew but had never heard speak, became the apostle of Christ. She began to speak of the child to all those who desired deliverance. 7 It was her moment of revelation. The events of her life became clear, all the questions were answered. She understood in that instant why God had led her through the sinuous, incomprehensible route of her existence. How many women in these 20 centuries since Anne the prophetess have seen in their widowhood an invitation from God to pass from human to divine love? Think of Saint Paul, of Saint Elizabeth, of Saint Francis the Roman. I have an unforgettable memory of a retreat at Lourdes in 1943. In their turn, without my having said a word, 7 widows of that painful year of 1940 came to tell me of their conviction that God had called them to consecrate their widowhood to Him. The priests who have received the confidences of many widows well know that there is in their hearts a call of Christ which is as indisputable, as imperious as the call of the young man to the seminary, of the young woman to the Carmelites. It is the call, "Come and follow me." Thus it is that we see widows who do not have families turning to the convent. But the mothers who are surrounded by young children also hear this call to give themselves wholly. Fearing illusion or temptation, they are upset, for there can be no question of their leaving their home. Certainly one must not be hasty in judging these desires, so frequent in the beginning of widowhood, to divorce oneself from all that is earthly, to promise oneself never to love another man, to close oneself up in the memory of the lost one. Many emotions enter into such desires, and they are not always the best. But it is wise to ascertain the source of the call, lest one risk becoming deaf to the desires of the Lord. These women, already burdened by maternal and household tasks, have often to earn their bread as well, by some occupation,